everyone. Welcome to episode 13, unlucky number 13 or lucky number 13. And this episode today is called Don't Call It a Comeback. So you're with Hostile Reconnaissance, myself, Sonny Dillon, and my colleague, friend, partner in crime, Marcus Elliott.
Hello.
That's the most formal introduction we've ever done, isn't it? I think.
Yeah. I'm surprised you're not stuck like, letters after people's names.
Post nominals, yeah. Dude, to be honest, I think the heat's probably just got to me. I think we're due an anniversary. We had our first episode a year ago on the Woo, right?
Yeah, and, I mean, not of publication, of recording.
Yeah. That's for because it published in the quote unquote fall autumn, didn't it? But I remember it being a similarly sunny day in the afternoon, and so I was listening back to the Woo episode last week when the sun was out, thinking we've not come a long way. I think we peaked with that first episode. I shared the podcast with some of the boys after a year of doing this. I felt confident enough to actually share it with some friends, and so I said to them, that the Euros are over and the football, cricket season is kind of in a middle ground before the test matches start in a few weeks. So I was like, guys, if you're a bit bored, if you're on the walk, taking the dog out or something, here's a podcast you might be interested in. And so, yeah, they'd be like, the feedback I got was, shame they're in the comment section. That's basically it. there was a couple of comments to suggest that they do kind of like it because they were related to, I think they were talking about some other stuff, and they said, so what's next on your agenda? Are you going to start break? Are you going to have like some sort of jingles or something like that? They were suggesting some sort of
elements.
Yeah, jingles and shit like that.
Well, we did talk about competition, didn't we? I did, I think, and you ignored me.
All right.
So just before we came on, we were talking about like Imperial leather soap. Like grandmas used to have Imperial leather soap, like years and years ago. Remember, people used to have those 3-bar gas fire things.
Of course.
Yeah, so you now had 3-bar fires. We could have 4-bar fires, but you get pick a topic each month, and then you've got to write 4 bars.
Oh yeah, yeah, no, I remember. Fire. Yeah. That required us being creative and actually writing something. Yeah, yeah. No, that was a good suggestion.
We have no talent.
I was gonna say, I'm reticent to, but I think that's something that we could muster up once a month, 4 bars. Yeah, yeah, it could be, it'd be absolute dog shit, but it'd be fun to try and do, I guess.
Well, we've got Instagram and we've got Twitter. I got it in early this week.
Yeah,
time. Yeah. If we think of a topic today, and then. Yeah. And then next time, people can join in. So once you listen, you can join in, both listeners.
Well, I've got a topic. I got a topic straight from the back, given what you discussed there. Soap or cleaning products.
Okay, yeah. Cleaning products.
Four fire bars on cleaning products.
Okay, I'm going to write that down. Cool.
Yeah.
Cleaning products.
Right. Number 4. 1, 2, 3, 4, yeah.
So we could just go into like Tesco and just list everything and make it right. It'd be great. It'd be fine.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, all right. So next time, I don't think we should share our responses on here because that's embarrassing, but we should do it on like social media or something. Whichever one we get back, the best one, we'll kind of read out or whatever.
Sweet.
That sounds good, doesn't it?
Sounds good. Yeah,
I mean, this won't actually be published until, I don't know, probably Christmas. So.
Yeah. I like it. It's good.
Cool. 4x5. Like your nan had, but like 33% better.
That's right. Slightly better, yeah. Cool. Today's topic, don't call it a comeback. Whose idea was this one? I think this was put onto the shared doc. I don't know what the genesis was behind this one.
We were talking about LL after the
for a change.
Yeah, no, I think it's because we hadn't mentioned LL in the last episode, and then we felt like we had to spend some time talking about him just because so you could get it out of your system, like a catharsis of some sort.
Can I be honest? I started listening to this new podcast. It's not completely off topic. I started listening to this new podcast, Hot Boxing with Mike Tyson. So it's like a back catalogue of a couple of years. Mike Tyson, I'm really fascinated by. I think he's an interesting character. Definitely flawed, but a bit of genius in him. And he's got a great podcast, and they had LL on it. An hour and 45. And I already knew LL was articulate and stuff and educated, but fuck me, the dude knows his history. Like, he's so well read. Like, he's genuinely so impressively read, like scholarly levels well read. Like, how the fuck he gets the time to do that and stay in shape and raise children and you know, sleep with every woman on the planet is quite remarkable, really.
So, and lip sync battle.
And lip sync battle as well, yeah. And the dude looks like fucking 16 still, so.
And acting,
yeah. No, very, very, very impressive gentleman. Yeah, his rap career is obviously falling off, but yeah, his name in the game is his status is legendary, isn't he? His OG status. So yeah.
Well, he's he's well into his 50s now, isn't he? What was he?
54, man. He's 50, same age as Tyson. He's 54, and the dude is just still looks 30, man. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and he was young when he started there, wasn't he? Was he like 16, 17?
Yeah. Smashed it. So it was from him and the kind of whole, like, you know, the Mama Said Knock You Out 1990 comeback, wasn't it? Which was...
Yeah, and I think we'd been talking about Common as well and how the big change from Canabara Dollar to Resurrection a few episodes ago. And I think it's the amalgamation of some of those conversations into this topic. And obviously, because we can borrow that great line from... Mama Said Knock You Out.
Yeah, sweet. So, I mean, I haven't really got any... I tried to do things chronologically because one follows the other, right, linearly, but I haven't really got any clear structure to this. I've got about two or three artists that I could focus on. The rest are kind of like mentions, but I really struggled to come up with... Because I struggled to come up with criteria.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. Same here.
Speak on it. What did you face as a challenge? Did you find this easy, difficult?
It's difficult. So I'm going to mention... So, I mean, I did a bit of research, saw what other people had said, and I tried to find things that are slightly different, take a slightly different angle to them.
But sure, like, sure.
If we use it as an example, I'm guessing you probably haven't talked about it, but Dre is the one that comes up quite often when talking about that because you've got kind of NWA. Then there's almost like... a comeback with his individual stuff that was based on the politics of the whole situation and label issues and stuff.
Easy, you can suck a big fat.
Yeah, and then there's the kind of the big gap, the breakup with Death Row, and then release in 2001. Again, that's another comeback.
In 99.
So this just, but yeah. There was a consistent work throughout the kind of the intervening
period. Singles, wasn't it? Singles, No so Diggity. And
working for other people, like working with other people. So it's almost like for him, like if you just take those kind of big albums that he has his name associated with, it kind of never left.
The words I wrote down was 7 years between 92 and 99, never fell off. And you said never left, So the word comeback... I had the same thing. People, I know his name came up a lot in the forums and stuff. Yeah, but I was the same as you. A comeback is when you've been away or you've fallen off. Like, you know, the lingo is fallen off, right? Like, if you're still out there, but your quality ain't up to standard. Whereas Dre's quality never fell off.
Yeah. I mean, but that's the thing. The LL thing was in response to the kind of the criticism he got for Walking Like a Panther.
Yeah, and the beef with Kool Moe Dee.
But that was only a year before, wasn't it?
I guess, you know, like, time is relative, right? And we don't have to get too quantum on this, but when hip hop was so young in its form, and when LL, Beastie, and then were doing 84, 85, I guess 12 months. 18 months would have felt like an eternity. A bit like the grime world, right? Like a year or two in 2004-5 would have felt like an eternity because no one knew if this thing was going to even last.
Yeah. I mean, you could argue that nowadays things feel faster because people have got access to information faster.
Yeah.
You know, you can go on and go in, record something, stick it up on the internet, and within a few hours of recording, it could potentially be in millions of people's ears.
Yeah.
Whereas back then, it was, you know, you record it, you press it, you kind of ship it out. It might go out tapes from people's, from the backs of the cars. It could, you know, and how you distribute it takes a lot longer. It might have been CDs into shops and things like that. But so in order to get the response, it's kind of a greater amount of time. But I understand what you mean in terms of the rate of change, the rate of evolution of hip-hop at that time. Was far greater and in innovation.
Rakim was 88, 89?
Yeah. 87, wasn't it? Paid in full.
Fuck. And it still sounds so good. Jesus. Yeah, so maybe at that time it did, a year or two for LL did feel like a long time, but yeah, that was the comeback, wasn't it? I mean, like you said, so his thing was a case of that one bad album and, you know, such a short lifespan, I guess. Where, you know, Dre, it was never fell off, just didn't have an album. And even then, people have been talking about The Detox for 20 years now.
Yes.
The album that was supposed to be called The Detox, right? And those mixtapes came out, and he did one which was Compton. But, you know, I remember listening to it, and the production is obviously great, it's really clean, but it's Anderson Park. It's quite an R&B album, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was really let down by that album, if I'm honest. I was really disappointed with that, because it was a soundtrack to, like, it came out at the same time as the film was out in 2015, although it wasn't a soundtrack to the album. But it just didn't work for me.
No, I know what you mean. I mean, yeah, so like LL, Radio in 85, Bigger and Deafer in 87, Walking with a Panther, 89, Mama Said Knock You Out, 1990. And that was, so if you think, Radio, massive, huge. Bad, huge. Walking Like a Panther, less so.
Yeah.
So it's not really, you know, I mean, they were two of the biggest albums of the 80s, weren't they? Radio and Bad.
Yeah. But yeah, like it was one poor album per se, and that was that. So yeah, but I mean, yeah, for me, a comp, like, what's a comeback? You know, like you think of like sports when you're back from the dead. Like looking at it from the, like, you need a narrative arc here, don't you? You need like a hero's journey, right? So
yeah,
someone to
yeah.
kind of come in, fallen off, you know. So it necessitates someone who came in. Who's a part of the euphemism here, someone who came in hard, right? You need someone who came like hard, had a big impact, rather than someone who came as a bit of a wallflower and then grew. You need someone who was known, and then they're like, what the fuck happened to that person? That's what you need, don't you, to really legitimize that. And Common, I guess, it was a complete reinvention.
I mean, I've had Common in my kind of long list, but I figured you'd probably talk about him.
Oh, you could talk about, I mean,
well,
shall we switch it up? We can switch to someone else.
Yeah,
now.
Well, I mean, he's had two, hasn't he?
Yeah,
Resurrection
yeah.
and B, I'd say, are two comebacks.
Oh, not Universal Magnetic in 2008. Okay, yeah.
No, that was, yeah. That put me off music for about a year.
Yeah.
All music. I just put
it. And magnets. Yeah.
And magnets, yeah. and Universal Pictures. Yeah. That was bad.
Yeah.
That was such a. Yeah, that was so bad.
I mean, we've talked to death about his 2005 B before, haven't we?
Yeah.
And we've covered Resurrection. We've covered those in quite some depth
exactly.
before. I think Resurrection's been covered to death. So we've covered, I guess we've covered his comeback. And those, I mean, 2005 comeback, you know, is by all. I mean, 94. Most people say it was a reinvention, not, as opposed to a comeback, whereas, well, but then he would call it a resurrection, so it's beyond a fucking comeback, it's a religious experience. So, I mean, who else have you got on your short long list here?
I mean, I picked a couple of people who had kind of been reasonably successful as part of a group or something, and then had kind of, left and found sort of further success later on.
Oh yeah, who you got in mind?
I've got Cube.
Ice Cube.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I got Pharoah. Now they're on my long list,
not
on my short list. But you know, Pharoah, one part of Organized Confusion.
Same.
Have you got?
Yeah.
All right, okay. Well, we can talk about it in a bit more detail then. I'm more than happy to. But yeah, Organized Confusion, loved them. Three albums. Imaginative, wordplay, lyrically dense. Prince Poe, I think, is a great foil for Pharoah, you know, and definitely not, it's not a one-sided relationship as well. It's a, like, genuinely two masters of the arts. And then all the kind of the issues with Pharoah with his labels okay, and the struggle to kind of get his music out there. I mean, it took how was it 2001 that Internal Affairs came out?
I thought it was 99.
Was it 99?
Was it really 2001? Right.
It took a long time. I think it was written and created far, you know, much earlier than that, and it took him so long to get stuff out there.
Wow, fuck.
And then obviously the issues with Simon Says, you know, the biggest hit, or the copyright issues with the samples that he'd used.
Yeah.
I mean, that was. It's then that next step, isn't it? It was the next step that he just then couldn't take because of, well, whether or not he wanted to. But it was the biggest hit in clubs.
Yeah.
Right. It just, still is, isn't it? It's just huge.
It's massive,
huge. But yeah, so his was kind of a bit of a comeback. But his was around label trouble. And Cube was similarly around kind of legal label trouble. Did you want to kind of... They're just both on my long list.
No, Pharoah, like, yeah, came to, like, obviously, we, so you knew we knew about him through Organized Confusion. Then the album came out. I'll just double check. It was 99. I remember hearing it. Yeah, I remember hearing it in 99. The, what's it called? The big, obviously, the Simon Says in 99.
The Light.
Yeah, and the Light. And but yeah, no, I had him down because of the 8-year gap between that and Desire in 2007.
Okay.
Because he had a lot. Again, he had that, you know, infamous verse on Lyricist Lounge in that year 2000 or something, wasn't it? And everyone knew he was a beast. He had a few bits here and there, but a few soundtrack bits. But Desire 2007, you know, the album cover where he's got the bandage on and stuff like that. I remember I think it was a bit too cerebral for me at that age. It was a bit lost on me, but going back to it, it really is a solid piece of work. And then obviously he's had a few since then, but I was thinking more in terms of that 8-year hiatus between Internal Affairs and Desire. 8 years is a long time for someone who is seen. I mean, you've got, okay, it's a, I don't know if this is an unfair comparison, but if you take someone like Quali, who came up at, you know, 98, didn't he, Black Star, and his first album came out 2000, Reflection Eternal. So a similar time, obviously, the same label, not the same label, affiliated label and stuff like that. But then Quali was like really fucking productive, wasn't he? 2002 Quality, 2004, the something, what's it, the Beautiful Struggle.
Yeah.
There was a mixtape after that. I mean, Quali, then 2007 Eardrum. So in the time between Pharaoh's first and Quali's fifth, I mean, it's 8 years. And you just think to yourself, damn, like, it would have been nice for Pharaoh to have been so productive during that time, because there was certainly a market for it. I mean, people were calling for it. People were waiting for the build up for Desire was, I remember, was big. I mean, people were really anticipating that album coming out.
Yeah, but I mean, this was his label issue though, wasn't it? I think we get this far too much in hip hop. I mean, I would say it's an unfair comparison with Quali. I understand why you have, but I mean, Quali is one of the most prolific writers.
Yeah. I'm just thinking of someone who's lyrical, like someone who's not known for their beats, like someone who's verbose, who's lyrical.
Well,
and there was an
ASAP Rock similar
Backpack rap. At that time, there was an appetite for it. There was an appetite for it. So for Pharaoh, there was a missed opportunity, because now obviously we're in a trap era. You know, early noughties was a Drake era.
Yeah.
That early 2000s was the prime time. You know, B came out 2005, Kanye 2004, Most Def. You know, it was a prime time for Pharaoh to come and actually, you know. But then he had his thing with Organized Confusion, so you could say he had his run there of three albums, didn't he? So,
but I mean, he did loads of like one-off stuff, didn't he? Loads of guest verses. I mean, loads of guest verses. He was on everything. It was really expensive for a while, because I was having to buy like people's albums just to get his guest verses.
I mean, the Lyricist Lounge verse, people talk about that as one of the greatest, you know, verses in hip-hop history, right? Where he pisses. Well, Most doesn't even, we've talked about this before, Most doesn't even try. And Most is a great rapper.
Well, Most does try, and then it's just destroyed. Like, if you take just Most verse in there, that's a great verse.
Great verse.
Oh,
great
brilliant, verse. Brilliant verse. Great and then verse. It's a different level.
Jaw-dropping. Jaw-droppingly terrifying.
Yeah. I mean, he did Fuck You from the Training Day soundtrack, didn't he?
Yeah, again, love that. That was it. A lot of sound. I was going to do my research. A lot of film one-offs, a lot of bits here, features here and there, on a remix here and there. But the kind of stuff that someone with his you know, writing pen as a sword was a waste. Absolute waste.
Because he was on Raucous, wasn't he? And then when Raucous went belly up, he...
That's another film.
Is he on the soundtrack for that? I don't think he is.
Probably everyone was, wasn't they? I think Grandma was on that soundtrack.
Yeah, because he was... Did he go to Shady Records?
Did he really? Oh, no, I think that's correct. Because I know Eminem was a massive fan, obviously.
Well, why not? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm sure he went there, and then that failed, and then he went somewhere else. Did he go to Priority or somewhere like that?
I don't know. I remember I listened to an interview with him recently about this, the travails. But again, he is one a candidate for comebacks, because he came back to 2007, and you know, you could argue, when was the last one in 2014? So even then, it's been a 7-year gap till 13. And the way he's reinvented himself with the kind of rap rock kind of fusion thing he's got going on now, I would say that's another great. I mean, that I always moan about rappers not aging well and not having something to say in their 50s and stuff, 40s, 50s. Pharaoh has blown me away with 13. It's a great concept album. It's unbelievably good. And I would say that's a comeback from PTSD, from a new, because I've always found the production to be lacking on Pharaoh's albums. Desire, PTSD, War. I think the production sounds just 5 out of 10 at best. I don't think he's ever had the production that his lyricism deserves. But this this album has instrumentation, and it does him justice, I think.
Yeah, can you imagine Pharoah in, you know, as the lead of like the Roots?
Bro, do you know what I mean? Like we have that, again, this is gonna sound really rude, but Black Thought almost like a pretender, right? Like almost like we've talked about this before, but like how Pharoah is a slightly better version than Thought. And they've been on the same track together, we spoke about, then we collaborate verses. But like, yeah,
Gorilla, I mean, Monsoon Rap.
Oh fuck. That's another feature, isn't it, on 2002's Quali album. So okay, my comparison's not completely off topic there. Yeah, that had Kanye, Black Thought.
Do you know what you've just when you said earlier, and it triggered something in my head, you talked about all his albums and about 13 being a concept album. I'd say PTSD is a concept album. I'd say We Are Renegades is a concept album.
Yeah,
I would say Stress, the extension agenda, the last OK album, was a concept album. In fact, all of Equinox is as well. So it's only Internal Affairs. It hasn't really got a concept. The biggest hit.
That's a commercial album. It as is, much yeah. as he can be a commercial
well,
album.
It was Raucous trying to rise right on the of, you know, when they were at absolute height.
Yes.
Peaks,
yes.
We drop Pharoah in and it just goes amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can see that from when they did the Simon Says remix, get Red and Meth on there, who's to feature on everything that time. You know, just like get Common on a track. It was a commercial endeavor out and out, wasn't it? Absolutely.
Still great album.
Still a fucking great album, yes.
Still great album.
So yeah, I'm glad we both had. I had Ice Cube above Pharoah on my list, and not in order, with a question mark next to Ice Cube.
Yeah.
Pharoah, man. Who else you got?
Okay, well, so. Do you want my short list?
Yeah,
a long list, or do you want me to go for like a proper?
Whatever,
just carry on talking. Let's just carry on talking. So I had one. So I'm going to throw this one away because I don't think we need to talk about it. But I had GZA down because obviously he had his early stuff, didn't he?
I think his pre-Wu.
Pre-Wu.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he had his kind of rebirth as part of Wu-Tang Clan. And then top 10 albums of my favourite albums.
Liquid Swords, 95.
Liquid Swords, yeah.
One of the greatest album covers of all time, any genre, any time, any place.
The greatest albums. Oh, it's just... Yeah.
Great fucking album.
So much. That's such a great album.
Basic Instructions, eh?
It is. It's great, yeah.
Yeah. No, it's genius. Well, that's what he's
Killer
made
Priest,
genius.
Isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, it's good.
I just think about his name, Killer Priest. So I've never, when you said it back, I heard it a different way. It's almost like an instruction.
Yeah.
Damn. That's very Catalonian in its philosophy. Kill a priest.
Kill a priest.
The killer priest. A priest who goes on killing. Interesting.
Well, last episode, didn't we have Fuck the Police? Which I don't think is quite so literal.
Yeah.
maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, unless you're Cameron, who fucks a pig, right?
Well. Yeah. Anyway, I had GZA, but I don't think it's a comeback. I think it was just a...
You know the word comeback, though? Again, it goes back to you had to come in hard / hot, didn't you?
Yeah.
You didn't. The Tommy Boy, whatever they were with. I mean, he wasn't really known, was he? So
no.
To call it a comeback would be quite to say that he was already there, which he never was.
No. So, okay. I'm going to go... I got one. First kind of released in about 1987 with Feel a Fresh Crew.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote all the rhymes for that. And then in 1989, released... his first album, No One Can Do It Better, and that's the DOC.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that was off my radar. That's a different one.
Yeah. So I've gone a little bit different. So he's made a comeback in a different way. He's completely reinvented himself. So I've taken the kind of the topic and I've tried to be a little bit creative with it, or I have been creative with it.
It's quite analogous to like saying like what's his name, Mask Man. What's it, Doom? Like coming out of KMD,
that kind of
thing. Yeah, yeah. That's a comeback. After someone died, didn't it, and you came back. Yeah.
Well, actually, he's probably a better example.
Right.
Because there was a gap, wasn't there? There was that kind of disappearing. Like, where's, where's it gone? And there was nothing. And then suddenly, he just kind of came back into, popped up and whatever. So actually, maybe Doom's a better example than DOC. But DOC went from, you know, writing Easy's rhymes along with Ice Cube, writing all of Feel a Fresh Crew's Rhymes. Fantastic first album, you know, that album. And then obviously his crash in 89 robbed him of his voice, and then he carried on writing. He wrote a lot of Dre's Chronic. He wrote on Doggy Style.
Yeah, because his name always gets a shout out, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, they were the bits he wrote, and then he got he said to, so he asked Snoop in, is it G Thing, that it's like, can you give me a shout out? I think it's, I'm sure it's that track that he kind of gets a shout out from it.
And that's then, a great shout, man.
Yeah, I just thought it was just something a bit different. But I think you're honestly, I think Doom's probably a better example
of that ilk.
Of that ilk, yeah.
I didn't write it down, but I mean, him, yeah, you know, his brother dying and coming back, that was a fucking comeback and a half. Yeah. And a reinvention, that's almost like reinvention. But yeah, DOC is a great shout, because he would never mention him, but he deserves his props. He deserves it for that horrible accident, you know, clearly that robbed him of being one of the greatest rappers to be known of his time. But he obviously is well respected. That's a good shout, dude. Very good shout.
Go on then.
What can I come up with first? I'm trying to think what thematically links the best. I've been bringing back to the jizzer and the whole thing about the comeback that wasn't a comeback. I had Gravediggers down. I'm sure you feel they might have crossed your thinking as well. I mean, was it a comeback?
Yeah.
Narratively, they framed it as a comeback. They've come back from the fucking dead, right? But again, per our kind of measure of like, were they ever? I mean, Prince Paul never fell off, right? he's never fallen off in 35 years. You know, you could maybe argue that the other guys from Status Sonic, maybe to a degree, but Prince Paul never fell off. And then RZA obviously was at the fucking peak of his game when Gravediggers came out as the Resurrector. You know, RZA was like one of the most sought after names in hip hop. So whether it's a comeback, nah, but thematically, the way they framed themselves, the way they storied themselves, a bit like Doom, you know, that whole kind of superhero kind of alter ego shit storytelling. You know, it's all about creating a narrative, isn't it? We all create a narrative within our own lives, right? I'm a this, I'm a that, whatever. And that was storytelling of a great, great risk, because horrorcore was not really a thing that existed, really, was it? And they took it. I mean, it was Big L had a kind of relation to it, didn't he? When he did his kind of horrorcore elements, there's more perverse rhymes and stuff. You just look back to hip hop, dude, and you think to yourself, "Fuck me in the '90s again." It wasn't such a brave art form in the mid-'90s when it was at its absolute heyday, where it would take creative risks like doing something as dramatic as horrorcore. And even, you know, even though it was, you know, ill-conceived and it was a bit of a shit show, but that kind of rap rock kind of, you know, crossover shit that occurred towards the late '90s, early '90s.
Well, seriously, Fred Durst got involved, it all ruined everything, because well, interesting you mentioned Prince Paul, because actually there's another example of a complete change of direction, which isn't quite a comeback, but De La Soul, 3 Feet High and Rising, kind of all really cute and kind of bouncy and fun, and then next one, De La Soul is dead.
Like, he has a fascination with the what's the word here, the occult, or the death kind of thing here, isn't it? It's a death drive. Was it Thanatos drive?
I'll take your word for it.
I think Freud talks about it, the death drive. I think he's certainly got some sort of interest in that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's produced some of the greatest albums. Oh, we talked about that a little bit before.
One of the greatest producers of all time.
Yeah.
So, what else you got, dude?
So we've mentioned Dre. We've mentioned DOC.
Doing the whole West Coast, are you?
Common. Yeah.
Snoop next, is it? Or
No. Because Snoop Lion is not a...
Not a comeback.
It's not a comeback. I mean, it's not a comeback that anyone wants.
Midlife crisis.
It's a cry for help.
Remember that fucking sensual seduction shit came up? My girlfriend at the time in 2006 fucking loved it. And she tried, she was a big... She was her brother, they were in the music industry. And she tried to explain to me why it was so fucking dope. He had a kind of MIA kind of vibe going on. You know, he was trying to do something a bit out there. And I fucking hated that shit. I mean, the last Snoop album I bought was probably Paid the Cost to Be the Boss, 2004. Which is heavy on the Neptunes, and it was fine, but I don't need any more of that shit in my life, to be honest now.
The last Snoop album I bought was 2001. Which obviously isn't. No, I don't think. I think the only ones I've bought is Doggy Style.
Great fucking album. Great fucking album.
Yeah, it is a great album, but nothing after that kind of.
No.
It was enough to kind of. let me part with my hard-earned cash. Yeah, I'd willingly take a hit on anything that Ferro produced as a guest artist on any album. Weird, eh?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I mean, I've got Nas in there.
Let's talk about that, because everyone bangs on about that, and it's always covered, right? Stillmatic 2001 was a great comeback.
Yeah.
Right. What's your thoughts on this?
I Am was an okay album. Nostradamus was a bit rubbish. What was that? Was that
99?
Yeah. It was a bit rubbish. And then Stillmatic was 2001.
Yeah.
So, I mean, because I Am was 97, 98, wasn't it?
3 years after Illmatic.
Yeah. It Was Written was 96.
Which I don't think is that bad.
That's a good album. That's a great album.
I think that's a decent album.
Yeah, no, I do too.
I think that's a decent album. Mobb Deep on there, under The Firm, wasn't it? Mobb Deep and Foxy Brown. I think It Was Written was all right. And then it got progressively worse, didn't it? And then,
I didn't think I Am was that bad an album.
No, but then Nostradamus was worse. If you ever listen to the Ramesh Ranganathan podcast, it comes up as his biggest fucking graph. I think it wakes him up at night is the track with Genuine, You Owe Me Something, which I used to really like, because at the time it was the Shiny Suit era.
Yeah, yeah.
It was all but then he had that guest verse on Puff Daddy's Hate Me Now, wasn't it? 2000, which had that dramatic kind of operatic strings. Yeah, the big video. And so that was like that. I would argue that was probably his quote unquote comeback. Where like, okay, Nas is still hard.
Yeah.
And like, it wasn't fluffy. And then obviously Ether and Stillmatic, and the way it opens, isn't it? The opening track of that album, Stillmatic, the very operatic again, big horns, isn't it?
And then it's the running, isn't it? So you've got Stillmatic, damn. And then
Godson,
and then is it Hip Hop Is Dead?
Nah, you've got the one, The Last Supper or something, the double album. And then you've got Hip Hop Is Dead, which is brilliant, 2006. I love that album.
But those two, Stillmatic. I mean, the fact that he borrowed the name again,
it's just the sheer title. Stillmatic.
Stillmatic.
I think the reason I was reticent to talk about it, or where I didn't put it down, is because it is so overcooked.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it was a good comeback, but I don't think the problem with Nas, though, and this is what Trevor Nelson said again in a recent podcast, he's a victim of his own success. Illmatic is one of the greatest albums of music of any genre, any time, any place, and he did it when he was 19.
Yeah.
That's his problem, you know. That's his quote unquote problem. He can never come close. So when you call it a comeback, it's like, yeah, it's all right. Stillmatic is nowhere even, it doesn't even hold a torch to Illmatic. It's not even the same fucking game, let alone leave, in my opinion.
I mean, they're strong words, but I know what you mean. Yeah, you've got one of the greatest albums of all time.
Stillmatic is perfect. Marcus, it is perfect. It is. If I had to tell someone, an alien, to learn what hip hop is, 94, this young man telling a story from his perspective with the greatest producers in the world at the time, Q-Tip, Premier, and so on. And it's got everything. I mean,
Which is weird, because we didn't pick it as the album to give to aliens.
No, we didn't.
Was it Takes a Nation?
We had a track. And the track we chose was Fight the Power.
Fight the Power, yeah.
We didn't have an album. If we had an album, the album I choose is Illmatic. Any day of the week.
Not Lyricist Lounge 2. Yeah, it was tracks, wasn't it? Yeah.
Not Pitbull's Miami from 2004 either.
Anything by Rick Ross. No, anyway. It was a legend had been created at 19 years old, and trying to hold on to that. I mean, there's a narrative there, isn't there? There's a story there of he's tried to scale back up to those heights with and each time he doesn't quite make it, and it drops off, and the expectation is so high each time, and it's another failure. I Am is not that bad an album. It's not a failure. Like, you put it to anyone else and it's still a good, decent album, especially at the time.
It's the pathos, isn't it, of like, you know, you can lead a person to depression, of a footballer not being, or a musician, or whatever art you want to pick here, someone not being able to recreate replicate the magic that they had owing to physicality, mentality, emotional state, time and place, availability of collaborators, whatever it is, the stars have to align. And for that man, his stars aligned when he was 19.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a thing of like child stars, isn't it? They have problems, you know. I'm not saying he was a child when he did that, but he, the fact that he's kept this shit together, you know, apparently, you know, he smokes a lot, but, you know, he's had a big public fallout with his wife, Khalees, but he hasn't gone off the rails. You know, he's still solid. Distant Relatives was a good album in 2010, but there is nothing. You know, recently did a podcast on Muhammad Ali. You know, Nas is a cool dude. He's in documentaries. But just to know that you're never, ever, ever going to come close, you can almost stop a person from trying, I think.
Yeah.
Fuck. That's maybe I've got a defeatist mentality, I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think you look at some of the... I mean, you look at, if you go and look at sports, how do you scale the heights after you've done something amazing? How do you keep scaling the heights? And it's only as the real...
They don't, do they? Players that win the World Cup, Champions League, it's very hard to maintain that level again year in, year out.
Well, I mean, you had the Barcelona team, didn't you, for a while?
Three, 4 years.
Who kind of kept doing it, who kind of kept... game, but every time everybody got a little bit closer to them, and it was a little bit less likely to happen, and you know, the odd times when they didn't. But it's, I mean, he's still good, but yeah, you're right. Was it a comeback? Still Matic. I think it was. It brought him back into people's thoughts as one of the best lyricists.
Of course, it was. I just feel like it's been overcooked, but it was. Yeah, there's no denying it. It was.
Yeah.
Should we move on?
Yeah.
Shall we go someone else? Let's go somewhere else. This is my favourite comeback, not because it is anyone knows who the fuck he is, but again, I know I bang on about him a lot. Is J-Zone. I sent you an audio last week, didn't I? One of the tracks, an instrumental. J-Zone, again, little known producer. I was introduced by my mate Dev. Big shout out to Dev in Cardiff. I remember speaking to Dev saying, who's your favourite, you know, hip hop artist of all time? He was J-Zone. Who the fuck is that? And then this little known producer who had a bit of fame in the late 90s, early noughties. His first album, Music for Du Madre, and a picture of someone's mum on the cover with a fucking 40, you know, spliff. And he was a proper underground rapper. Pimps Don't Pay Taxes in 2001. He was a parody rapper, right? He's a parody rapper. And then he had a 12-year hiatus before 2013's aptly titled Peter Pan Syndrome.
Yeah.
You know, it says what it says in it. It's obvious. And he came back, and now he's got, like, I think I mentioned the other day, the Drew Wrights. He's in kind of like...
He's a drummer, isn't he?
Yeah, funk band. Yeah, he's a self-taught drummer. He's not a great drummer, but he's a fun drummer. And that track I sent you, you know, it's got a Kishore Kumar, which is a Bollywood sample. His crate digging is unbelievable. Marcus, I beg you, if you haven't listened to the album, go back to listen to those albums. They're on Spotify, right? Or Apple streaming.
I've got a couple of them. Dude,
his sampling is otherworldly. Like, because Dev was breaking it down for me. Like, he gets some old Greek fucking shit, like stuff that he digs. In the hip hop world, he's known as being like an epic crate digger because he finds stuff that, you know, other people just don't know. Everyone has a certain, you know, point. Like, you know, like we talked the other week, I was going on about how, what's his name? Pete Rock and stuff. They all use the same funk records, 68, 71. So that, like, is cool. It's really inventive. It's brilliant. But everyone has heard like Today, right? The one that Pete Rock sampled in Troy. So like, what J-Zone did that is so brilliant is that he was like, I'm gonna find some fucking out there samples. Like, he goes where I haven't heard anyone use the samples he uses. That itself is something that producers would be like given a proper nod to. And he reworks it, and he'd record samples onto a cassette and then record it back onto one to make it sound even dirtier. And he came back in 2013, and again, uneven album. But it was just so fun. I had a massive smile on my face when I heard it because I thought he was done for. And it just, you know, it's not a great piece of work, but the fact that he made a piece of work after 12 years, self-funded, dude was selling the records from his fucking garage. Like, he would post it to you. Like, he would post it to you himself. No record label. You know, he is like a proper underground cult fucking hero, man. The nearest thing we've got, I know he's worked with Jest in the UK. Jest, we should really do an episode on UK hip hop at some point soon, but because like Jest does never get his roses. And Jest is a very similar type of producer rapper to J-Zone, like knows hip hop, like hip hop connoisseurs. And Jest's sampling and fucking wordplay and stuff is brilliant. So big shout out to J-Zone. I think I just wanted to shout him out as much as anything to raise people's awareness of who he is and to go back and actually listen to his music and support him, because he's brilliant.
Well, there's comedy in there, isn't there? There's comedy in there.
Yeah.
There's great musicality. There's intelligence. Yeah, it's, yeah, I like J-Zone.
Yeah, because he made a memoir as well that came out the same year, like How to Not Make It as a Rapper or something, yeah, in 2013. You know, it's so fucking brilliant. He's such a colourful character. Some of the tracks, they're just fantastic. They're Slim Shady-esque in their kind of caricatureness, without being as kind of like, you know, as dark. And the samples reflect his sound as well. You know, his samples are really, really funky.
Funky. No, I think, yeah, that's a good shout.
12 years is a long break,
12
man.
Years, and yeah, because it was like a steady kind of drop off, wasn't it, as
yeah,
well
just, I think he's probably working a day job somewhere in a factory, like, I don't know what the fuck he was doing, but like, yeah, fair play to the brother, man.
Well, I'm waiting for the new Black Star album, so I can say Mos Def has or Yasin Bey has made a comeback, but it's not released yet.
It's there Madlib produced it, they're ready
apparently. Right, I got one more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can beat 12 years with if I think you're going to do what you're going to do.
No,
you can
probably, I'm not.
It can be an 18-year one. You want
it
to be.
It's not a date one. It's not a chronology one. It's a change.
Okay.
And it's somebody who came. Him and his DJ partner had like 4 albums in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And a variety of other kind of got involved with a whole other like load of stuff, and it was only until it must have been early 90s when him and his partner kind of stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And he went, then did some acting work and things like that, and then it was around about 97, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
97. Yeah, 97 when he kind of came out with his next big album, and it was huge.
Wreck It?
No. We're talking multi-platinum selling return to force.
97.
And then he released another big album in 99. Again, that was huge, and then a couple of other ones since then, but no idea?
No.
He is probably the most famous black actor around in the... Well, no. EMR and artist.
Eddie Murphy?
No, he's more well known...
Wesley Snipes?
No, he's more well known for his acting. Like, if you ask, like, if you say to people, what is he? Is he an actor or is he a rapper? He's
Don Cheadle?
No, Will Smith.
Oh, fucking good shout, dude.
Yeah.
Good shout.
DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince.
Oh, I like it. Awesome. That's caught me really left field, man. That is a good shout, bro. That's a good shout. I like that. I like that, man.
I was laid in bed one night,
bro,
and
that's
just
a good shout, man. Well played.
His name popped into my head. I'm like, yeah, like,
bro, that's a good
that's
shout.
That's a comeback.
That's in music wise, yes, yeah. Like he got nominated for a Grammy, for what's it called, Big Willie style,
Big Willie style,
yeah,
and Will Anderson.
Bro, that's a good one, man. Because even though like he was massive in the public eye as an actor, it's a comeback, you know. And he had his moment in 2005, didn't he, with that album as well. Now, fair play, bro. Good shout.
Yeah, Lost and Found was the one in 2005. Yeah,
no, that's a good shout, bro. Good shout to Will Smith and Jazzy Jeff.
Because if you go to their first two albums,
Grammy Award winning for what it's worth.
Yeah, but Rock the House was a great album. I don't think it did particularly well, but it's a great album. 87.
Yeah,
and then he's the DJ and the rapper.
Yeah, classic. Yeah,
brilliant. And then you've got like And In This Corner, and then Home Base.
Yeah,
91. Then there's Code Red, and that wasn't very good. But Home Base, he's the DJ, and the rapper, and Rock the House. Great out. They're great albums, and you know, he's got his place, isn't he? He's not. I mean, he's that kind of like kind of comedy, less serious, kind of a bit poppy, even
he's
as Fresh
fine.
Prince.
He's fine. He's like, he's such a nice guy, and you can't fucking hate on Will Smith. Like, he's a fine, he's an average rapper.
Yeah.
You know, but he's better than Dre, you know, and he's better than Dre. And he knows where he is, and he has fun with it. You know, he's an MC to get the crowd going. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, man, I got a big respect for, and he's such a lovely man, isn't he, Mr. Willard? He's such a lovely dude. He's a humble bro. Like, he represents the culture. He's not a biter. He's not buying the culture. And whatever happens in life, he will always have one of the best hip hop songs of all time, Summertime. So fair play to him.
Yeah.
That's a great shout, bro. Great shout. Big Willie Star, I had that cassette and CD.
Oh, man. Nice.
Yeah, but that was a good album.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're all, yeah, you know what you're going to get, don't you?
Yeah, it's inoffensive. It's good stuff. It's happy party music. You have it on, you know. It was great. No, I've got no problem with Will Smith, man. He's not corny either. He's fine. Like, he's
exactly.
fine. He's fine. Yeah. You can't be corny with DJ Jazzy Jeff, one of the greatest hip-hop DJs of all time. You can't.
I mean, even if you take Wiki Wild Wild West,
yeah,
you know, that's it's cheesy.
It's fine.
But it's still good.
Yeah.
Like, and actually, it helped introduce kind of rap to more people.
Bro, like, you know, that's
film's not crap, but
yeah. Oh yeah, I mean, the song, I remember fucking, remember that Channel The Box? I remember calling them requesting that song, and I waited there for 3 hours all morning for them to play it.
Wiki Wild Wild West.
It's pop rap, it's fine.
Yeah.
You know, it's, but the thing is, you know, what he never did to his credit, Will, like, that's probably turned into Will Smith loving now. But like, is it unfair to say he's a bit like LL, like, towards, you know, the kind of murder LL has kind of inoffensive, happy, poppy rhymes towards the end? I know that wasn't how he started, but like, there's similar demographic, similar age, so like that mid 90s, they're probably doing similar-ish things, because that one, especially once LL, actually that's not fair, because LL was still pretty hard in 2000 when he came up with GOAT and stuff, especially when LL had that, when he signed the disclaimer to never swear again on rap, right? So like 2001, there was like a thing that a lot of rappers signed, that they'd never use homophobic lyrics anymore, and they won't swear on records anymore, use the N-word. And LL was one of the people that signed that in like 2001. It's like an unwritten, unsigned kind of agreement that a few rappers said, we're going to do this to kind of like clean up the culture in terms of popular appeal. And so at that point, you know, like 2001, 2002, it was that album, wasn't it? 10, LL Cool J 10.
Yeah.
I had that song Paradise with A-Marie.
Yeah.
That's a very Will Smith kind of demographic kind of track. You know what I mean? That way, when LL's saying that, like, Paradise is very nice. I mean, fucking, it's hardly going to win any awards for lyrical dexterity, but radio appeal, friendly, that's the Will Smith kind of vibe. And so you can see what they're doing, both fit, you know, athletically, kind of clean cut, as it were.
Yeah.
Black guys. You know, it's Will Smith is, it was a stereotypical, it was that horrible cliche, like, he's the black guy that a white girl, blonde girl could bring home to her parents and they'd be cool with it. You know what I mean? Like, a racist family would be okay with Will Smith coming home because he's one of the quote unquote good ones.
Yeah, and he's not too dark.
He's not too black.
He's not.
Unquote,
yeah, you know. He was rich, or he lived with a rich family in Fresh Prince. So it's okay. Yeah. He's domesticated.
Yeah, he's domestic. It's all that kind of patronizing bullshit. Yeah, but you know they go for the same. And then LL was like, you know, LL was on like NCIS playing cops and fucking robbers. And you know, I mean, imagine Ice-T playing a fucking cop. I mean, that's just something else. And that's parody taken to its fuck. Someone's like some situationist fucking surrealism.
He's good though.
Fucking legend. But yeah.
No, like,
Will
like,
Smith, man, that's a great show.
Ice-T's genuinely like a good actor in
he's a good player, man. He's a good dude. He's a good dude. But no, fair play, bro. Fair play.
But that's my last one, man.
Bro, I got a few left, man. I cannot believe, why on earth did you not put a Tribe Called Quest in there?
Because I think we've talked about this before.
The Love Movement's better than We the People, whatever it's called.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's not, though. But it's not really a comeback. It's
Bro, it's 18 years, bro.
No, it's 18 years, yeah, but it's not a comeback. It's a farewell.
Okay, oh, fair play.
So I almost put De La in there, like, a couple of times, because, again, they just kind of keep going.
Well, they're still going, man. Fuck.
Yeah, but it's a farewell. It's, you know, it's the end of Tribe, you know, and it was very clear that it was the end of Tribe.
It's making me sad now.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, with Five passing the year before it was released.
Yeah.
And
ruined it for everyone, didn't he?
Yeah, they're not. I know, what a selfish bastard. Yeah. And they said that, you know, the Tribe had ended. So, I wouldn't see that as necessarily a comeback, because it's not catapulting them on to anything further.
Oh, that's quite poignant. I was wondering where. I thought it's a glaring omission, but that makes sense the way you've seen it. I guess the big one for both of us was probably MF. I never had him in my thoughts, but I didn't write it down.
Yeah, I know. It didn't even cross my mind.
But DOC was the esque version you had of that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I had two more. One was Royce the 5'9".
Good shout.
Because, you know, he's been around for like 20 years. I remember hearing him on one of his like mixtapes in like 2000.
Yeah.
Great rap. I mean, it was 2018 Book of Ryan, wasn't he? He had a mixtape or two when he came back.
Yeah.
I mean, he came back with Premiere 2014, P-Rhyme, Prime, P-Rhyme. Whatever you want it, Prime, isn't it?
Yeah, Prime,
and
Prime 2.
Book of Ryan was his debut. Sorry.
It was like his major label debut, wasn't it?
It was like independent. No, sorry, it was like an individual album, wasn't with Premiere, it was him. Because before that, like, he had an album years ago, wasn't it? Yeah. And Slaughterhouse was his thing, you know, the bad meets evil. So all that time, he's got Slaughterhouse with Joe Budden, like a kind of super group, Joe Ortiz and so on. Then you've got Bad Meets Evil with Eminem, you know. But in terms of like resurrection personally from his alcoholism and stuff, like from being around for like 20 years, you know, like from the Detroit scene, a fair play to him, man. I'm looking him up now when his first actual album was. It was Rock City 2002. I remember that one. Yes, I remember that album. Yes, 2002 Rock City. I think I had it on bootleg as well. That time I was at college, I used to get all these CDs. Someone used to copy a CD and then used to photocopy the cover and then used to put it in like you know, those plastic wallets, like, you know, for like a pound I'd buy it off someone. But yeah, I remember that album.
Not one of those car CD sleeve things that you put like 30 CDs in.
Yeah, yeah, probably walking around college with that shit. Yeah. That's how I bought the Blueprint, Steelmatic. I bought that era, 2001, 2003. I had every album going, like one day in the week when they'd come out, bro would come in the next day, you buy everything, and then he'd give you like a deal for like £5, you get like six.
Yeah. And then he'd take it back the next day. Get a refund. To Woolies.
Yeah. Now your Book of Ryan 2018 was like his big, like, okay, yeah, Royce is here. This is a concept album, it's a body of work. You know, Prime was 2014. I remember the Shady Cypher 2011. You know, he never kind of went away, but Book of Ryan, everyone was like, okay, Royce is someone who's aged better. Yeah. Royce is someone who answers my kind of call for someone. Can they not get better as they get older? Royce is the answer to that. He's a thinking man's rapper, and he's better now than he was 20 years ago, and that's a beautiful thing, man. So big up to Royce.
Yeah, we've kind of talked about it a little bit, haven't we? I mean, especially this album. I don't know if it was on the podcast or off, but it's like I get the feeling like he's always been talented. Like, if you even listen to him for like the early stuff with Bad Meets Evil,
he's always good.
I mean, you know, and he's really talented. It's just that when, obviously, with all the issues, it's almost like he's lacked confidence.
Agreed.
In himself and his ability. He's always needed that somebody else there to be his kind of crutch. And it's only now he's, you know, with Book of Ryan, it's a really personal album as well.
Beautiful album.
Great album. I mean, I quite often I keep saying to, like, sharing friends, Strong Friend.
Yeah, bro, I know you shared that with me as well. It's a deep track, man. It's kind of one that slips to you by because you're too busy to Caterpillar on repeat. But yeah, it's a great track.
Well, it's not even really a rap, is it? It's just
a beautiful piece of music.
It's a beautiful piece. So, I mean, it's a great, I love that album. You told me to buy it, actually.
For real,
And I was not disappointed. No, I gave you that one, definitely. I think that's a great comeback. Someone who, well, it's like a comeback stroke late bloom. Like, Slaughterhouse was big, but kind of underground.
It's beautiful. Like, he has answered my question, as it were, for someone who's grown better. Because lyrically, he's got more to say. Like, he came out from alcoholism, he had something to say. You know? He's got something to do and say, and he's done it beautifully. Like, he is the exception to that kind of rule of people not aging so well. So Royce for me is right up there, man. Yeah.
Yeah, good call. Who's the other one then?
My last one. Not to mention him as Lupe. He always fucking banging about Lupe. Yeah, I know. But okay, so 2006. But then his really is a comeback, bro. Because 2006, he was the hottest rapper on the planet.
Yeah.
He was literally the hottest rapper on the planet. I saw him at Somerset House outdoors in London in 2008. That is reserved for like the upper A-list shit, right? He was on the cover of GQ magazine. Pop culturally, he was a worldwide phenomenon. Cornel West called him the most important rapper alive. You know, Kick Push, that whole kind of thing. 2007, yeah. The Cool was massive. He was on the, he was charts. You know, that Superstar song was on the radios for like fucking a year. You couldn't go anywhere without hearing Lupe's Superstar. Radio friendly, puts a bit of knowledge in there, but it's inoffensive. You know, good production, everything was tight, and then he fell off a bit, right? And then you had Lasers, which was a bit of a mishmash as a label problem. Again, going back to Pharaoh, label problems. 2012, Food and Liquor 2, some great tracks, but again, label problems. Yeah. And then 2015, I know I keep banging on about this fucking album, as, and I know it's going to go down in history as one of the greatest pieces of hip-hop. I keep banging on about, I keep putting my hat on this album. It's such a great concept album. It's so fucking deep. And that, from 9 years from his first album, is a comeback for the fans. Like real Lupe fans who just want lyrics upon lyrics all say that was like, it's a cult classic. And it's been 6 years already since that album. I cannot fucking believe it. But that was a comeback. That was like, ah, yeah, Lupe still got it. And it was only released because Anonymous put pressure on the record label to do it.
Yeah, and because he had some issues, didn't he, with a lot of criticism. Was it anti-Semitic?
Yeah, I mean,
statements or something like that, where it kind of he was no longer the media darling. And
bro,
was,
I mean, listen, no one listens to our podcast, so we can say it. But America and Israel have a very fucked up relationship, right? I mean, Israel is this kind of his puppet state in the Middle East.
Don't we all suffer for it?
Don't we exactly? And you know, Obama, you know, he has a line, isn't it? Gaza Strip was getting bombed. Obama didn't say shit. That's why I didn't vote for him. Next one either. I'm a part of the problem. My problem is I'm peaceful. Like, and he went to a rally and for Obama, and he kept saying that line over and over again. He's a political dissident. You know, he is a political dissident. And once you do that in Obama land, in where most, like where people like, you know, I mean, just take, you know, someone like Black Thought, for example, who's a big fan of Obama, or Common, for that matter. Common, who's been to the White House, met with the Obamas.
Campaigned.
Big fan. Pardon?
Campaigned.
Campaigned.
Yeah.
Black Thought, you know, the Roots, they obviously, you know, I mean, in that famous Funkmaster Flex freestyle, was he goes, Obama, I wish he had 4 more years, right? Like, these
well,
guys...
To be fair, I think given the what came next.
Yeah. I mean... I mean, in terms of like legislation, I mean, it was obviously, I know, I see what you're saying, but like, I think, well, it's clear to see. I mean, and Lupe's spoken about it implicitly. You can't come out too much because it will just get fucking probably, you know, finished, excommunicated. The very fact that the album had to be put out by Anonymous, the very fact that, you know, media companies, major media, didn't want to have to go near him because he was too quote unquote political. You know, and if you're a black person in America at that time who's not on the Obama bandwagon, you're seen as a kind of party pooper. You're seen as someone who's a problem. And that's why he kind of got pushed to the side. Because he wasn't, you know, and he's like he said, he goes, I'm not culturally as relevant as I once was because people don't like what I've got to say.
Yeah.
Which is a real shame. That's why I think the beautiful thing about the pluralism of hip hop in the 90s is that you could have a Big L, a horrorcore stuff, you could have a Wu-Tang, you could have, you know, West Coast, you could have, Tretch, you could have so many different perspectives. Some of us want to fuck around, smoke weed. Some of that are so political. You know, it was a beautiful tapestry of different perspectives. And what we've got now, we've got fucking Dre, and then we got J. Cole and Cut. I mean, it's just, it's a paucity of perspective. And that's, that makes everyone's perspectives weaker. It's not a diss against Dre, you know, Drake, but isn't it sad that there's a pause? I mean, Exhibit was talking about this on a podcast recently. They were like, you know, so I've got a lot of time for Exhibit as well. His first album, 96, something about Live Fast and Die Hard, or something about Life in the Fast Lane or something. It was a good album, solid album. And people are like, why don't you release some music? He's like, I don't want to make no fucking trap music. Like, I don't want to make trap beats. Like, and rhyme the fucking, you know, dictionary on, alphabet on top of that. He goes, I ain't got a place in today's landscape for music, to be honest. That's what he said. And he's sadly right, I think.
Well, unless you create a niche for yourself. I mean, like, you know, you've got Lupe, you've got Royce, and Pharaoh, especially, kind of created it. And it's never going to be mainstream.
Yeah. But there's still space, isn't there?
Yeah, and that's a very good point. I think that's speaking to the fact of Exhibit's feeling of lack of being able to reinvent himself or...
Yeah.
You know, he's not Pharaoh or Lupe or Royce, is he?
Exactly, so. Yeah, that was going to be my next point. He is not.
He's not any of those leagues. He's a 6 out of 10 rapper. He's good.
Fine. Yeah.
I think that's... it's a good call. I mean, I knew there was going to be Common in there. I knew there was going to be LL, obviously, because it was about... And then Lupe. I mean, I think that's your holy trinity, isn't it?
Bro, you had Beastie 5 Boroughs on your list as well. I remember from a time ago. That was a great album, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. Yeah. Why do not... Oh, they just get on my nerves.
Is that the 2004 album?
Was it 2004?
To the Five Boroughs. That was To the Five Boroughs,
was
yeah.
Was it later than that? I remember
a friend of mine, Kanu, saying, bro, this is the best hip-hop album of the year. And it was June 2004. To the Five Boroughs, the sixth album. And I remember I said, bro, what do you mean best album, hip-hop album of the year? That was like when Chingy was out and fucking Chameleonaire or that kind of shit. And he goes like, bro, he went to school with me. He was like, bro, this is the best fucking album, hip-hop album of the year. And at the time, I bought a Ludacris album, I think it was called fucking Chicken and Beer or something stupid like that, same day. And I remember listening to it and thinking, because it's the first album since Hello Nasty. So that's like 6 years, bro. And I remember listening to it going, fuck yeah, man. 2004, that is a bit, they weren't relevant, but they were still good, man.
98. I mean, I had Hello Nasty and I listened to it a lot because of Intergalactic.
Yeah.
And apart from that, it was a pretty shit album.
But bro, 2004. I mean, talk about comeback to the Five Boroughs.
Ill Communication was the last decent album, I'd say.
Yeah,
Hello Nasty was successful, but I don't think it was a good album.
Yeah, but Ill Communication is a proper album. So in terms of comeback, and therefore, the thesis is even stronger that this was a real comeback.
Yeah.
I mean,
would you say they then like moved on from it? I mean,
that was a great album. It's an instrumental album. It's just instrumental.
And Hot Sauce Committee Part 2.
Yeah. But you know this album, that opening track, Check It Out and stuff like that. It's really hard. I mean, this is a great album. And it's a slept-on album. It's a great album. The question is, I don't know how much of the music was made or produced before 2004 and they kind of just had it waiting to get it on an album. But I thought it was... I remember Kanu was saying that to me and I said... Fuck Beastie Boys, man. They ain't done nothing since fucking, as you said, that one with the...
Intergalactic.
Intergalactic with the video, right? I said, these fuckers have been dead.
Yeah.
And they came back. And it was dope. It was so consistent. I mean, I'm looking here, like, one review said it's the best album, their best album since Paul's Boutique. Which is...
Well, you've got some great tracks. Actually, no, you're right. I've not listened to it for a while, but check it out. Three the Hard Way, Right Now, Open Letter to NYC... The Brouhaha. They're all good tracks.
Bro, it's dope. It's a solid album. It says, I mean, I love some, I'm reading some of the reviews here. I'm doing the wiki thing. They're so beautiful to read because it's like, with the Five Boroughs, Beastie Boys discover a musical entryway to an earlier, more innocent era, affording listeners the exuberance of youth, along with the hard-won wisdom that only can come with experience. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very New York sound, that album.
Well, it's the Five Boroughs, isn't it?
That's, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Losing the name. No, that's a good call. That's a good call.
Well, that's your call, bro. You had that on the document.
That's why I said it was a good call, yeah. I completely agree with you. You're a wise and...
I had it listed for you to talk about.
All right, is it like that? What is it? Are you the DOC and I'm EZE? What do I have to say next?
I have had a car crash, though. A couple of car crashes.
So have I?
Yeah, I did.
I've not been arrested, and to my knowledge, I don't think I've ever had AIDS.
Okay, I have been arrested. I don't think I've ever had AIDS.
Yeah.
So I'll be the DOC.
Okay.
Anyway, bro, should we go over and out?
Yeah.